Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could.
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Good evening again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, July 11th, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on the East Coast, and I am Mike Sempervivi. And after taking last week off, we've lost Les Thatcher. Actually, I think Les is in the Carolinas right now and couldn't be with us, but one guy who's actually in the Carolinas and could be with us is Mr. Mike Mooneyham, the fourth member of our Beatles crew here at ringsiderap.com's Ringside Wrap show. And Mike, with that terrible introduction out of the way, is really, Rich threw off my time completely by having Booker T and the MGs play for so damn long before he gave me the cue to go. I'm just going to turn it over to a professional like you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That was a very nice introduction, and I'm always glad to be on have the opportunity to be on the show with you guys.
Now, I know you were on vacation last week and didn't get a whole lot of chance to catch up on everything that's been going on,
yeah.
Which, if you had a chance to hear about Raw, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. And when it comes to TNA, it wasn't necessarily a good thing, actually, coming out of Sunday night. But I guess we'll start with the big boys first. 3 hours is coming up. They can't fill two. This past Raw, I think Graham Coffin from the great History of WWF website said it the best, where he actually asked on Twitter on Monday night, was an intern writing the show? And that's kind of what it felt like. I know you didn't get a chance to see it, but
No. From
what you've heard about it, what'd you think?
Well, it sounded like a real train wreck, and it looks like they're getting really silly with a lot of characters and a lot of angles that they should be taking much more seriously. Case in point, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. You know, this should be a really marquee match for a lot of hardcore fans who have been waiting to see these two, you know, get into their feud and really get things heated up. And, you know, AJ is doing a really nice job as the crazy chick, but, you know, I think they're just going to take this angle down silly lane and do something really stupid. And, you know, I think it really takes away a little bit from the seriousness of Bryan and Punk. You know, Punk's come on as a guy who's railed against the company and, you know, all of the crazy antics they do and the crazy storylines. And unfortunately, I think he's going to be involved pretty heavily in this one. You know, I'm not crazy about where this deal is going at all.
Yeah, I know there were a lot of people who were, you know, the Kane, you know, interjection started after they had a couple of matches a couple of months back. People are like, you know, I don't care because this is going to, you know, extend out Daniel Bryan,
yeah,
and CM Punk. I'll get to see their matches. And now, you know, some are saying that same thing when it comes to AJ Styles, I'm sorry, but AJ Lee and her as well. But this is a case where, to me, unlike a Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles, who you've seen fight a million times, and then they put a new spin on it on Sunday, the spin that WWE is putting on this makes me want to see those matches less and less, because they're so heavily overshadowed by this incredibly cartoonish situation that's going on with two guys in there who, this is almost like their challenge, I guess, of being sports entertainment and dealing with something like this. And again, everybody's doing a good job in what WWE wants, I guess, but it's just, it's too overshadowing and too overpowering. And she just, it's, they're just beating her over everyone's heads on Monday night, which, you know, the cuteness factor is, you know, in a lot of ways beginning to wear off here.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. She's done a really good job in her role, but I think we're going to see a lot more of it. And you know, and I'm sure a swerve is coming, and it could be with Kane, who knows. But it does distract from a match that really, you know, we as fans should be very interested and very in tune with. But I think it's going to be the AJ show. And, you know, that's typical WWE. They see a character picking up a little bit of steam. A lot of fans are into AJ, and they sort of overshadow the main people in that angle. And I think this is to Punk's detriment. You know, he's been doing a really good job, but I just don't like where this is headed at all.
Amazing. They worked so damn hard to create the next Raw moment where, you know, when you step back and you look at the big moments as they count them down, and obviously they've done a couple that just, and the people talking about them, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, some of the things that they've done, like even the cartoonish ones, like McMahon in the bedpan or any of that sort of stuff, just they came from organic roots, and they allowed themselves a chance to blossom up. And they're just such, and they've been in such a rush to try to beat things over the head that it's just amazing to see them make the same mistakes over and over again and not figure out why they can't get traction. And as a fan, and not even as somebody who just, you know, has been observing this, you know, for way too long in my life. But just as a casual TV fan, it's not fun to watch it too most of the time. So how are they going to be able to pull off three? Yeah. And how would, I don't know, how would you suggest they pull off three? Or what are your feelings going into it?
Well, you know, Vince, that's sort of Vince's MO, to really take guys who have been very established in other organizations, even Ring of Honor, and sort of prove to the audience that, yes, Vince McMahon can make these guys, even the most realistic characters, very cartoonish, and his characters. And I really think Vince does this to prove that he can actually do it. And he gets a kick out of that. And that's where I think that's the whole motive, I think, of Vince putting Brian and Punk in such a role. He wants to prove he can do it, and you know, forget the wrestling purists and traditionalists and the hardcore fans who want to see some really good wrestling. Vince is going to put that cartoonish slant on it, and that's what it involves.
Mike, you've had a chance to observe WWE's process for years, and I know you're, you know, familiar with what Dory Funk would do with his dojo, and what Les would do with OVW and Cornette and the whole nine yards. WWE, in a way, they've just signed Sarah Del Rey, which was bandied about, I'd heard at the ROH tapings, that she could have a position there, if not as just a trainer for the girls in FCW, but at least she's got a role. They've signed Matt Taven. They signed Pac, who some people would be familiar with from Dragon Gate USA, but he's more of a staple for Japanese fans, American and British Japanese fans who've had a chance to follow his career. Claudio's up on the main roster. Chris Hero, Ricky Steamboat Jr., Tyler Black, John Moxley, they've been able to acquire talent that's had a chance to travel a little bit and are at least passionate in their craft and the fact that they were all wrestling fans, and they've been able to actually gather a lot of talent, and they're all in FCW right now. And it looks like they're pushing away from the I shouldn't call them out or anything like that, but the guys like Conor O'Brien and some of the guys they've had on the past NXTs who have been more models and, like, you know, that type of thing. Alex Riley kind of falls into that too, although I like him more. They seem to have a bunch of talent there, but there seems to always be problems with the FCW trainers not being able, obviously with Kern and Rhodes and all the Regal, all those people down there, they could do something, but they obviously come up, and WWE and Vince McMahon has their own ideas. With the amount of talent they're sitting on right now, though, with all of those guys who have had a chance to travel and learn a little bit and really be passionate about things, is it possible that they fall into another little bit of a golden era if they just learn to back off a little bit and not be so heavy-handed in trying to make these guys into something they're not?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they have a virtual treasure trove in their developmental system right now. And, you know, at its peak, Ohio Valley Wrestling was, they produced some very good talent, and that's mostly when Jimmy Cornette was there.
And that was also, and I need to throw in here, but it was oftentimes the best show on TV that week. I mean, it was really, really good when that thing was humming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he knew how to groom talent. That was sort of his forte. But how many times did we see that great talent come up to WWE and everything they had been taught was sort of, you know, done away with? Their gimmick was changed. Their character was changed. And it was hard for a lot of these guys to recover, and some of them didn't. Some of them are out of the business now. But those guys would tell me, look, you know, we honed our gimmick. We had really, really good matches. And we went up to WWE, and they told us to forget everything we had learned, that they were going to re-indoctrinate us into the system. We were going to get new gimmicks, and we were going to do things a different way, which to me, that's sort of defeating the purpose. Now, you know, I don't know if it was just a Cornette thing or not. And I don't know if they're doing – I don't think they're doing the same thing with their facility up in Tampa. But, man, I mean, look at all of the talent there. You know, you mentioned Sara Del Rey, who has been around the business for years. She could go in the ring right now and probably get a great match out of people like Natty Neidhart and, you know, the gals who actually know how to wrestle. They have so many, and Richie Steamboat has been around. He's been well-groomed. He's been to Japan. He's trained with Harley. He's trained in Florida. He's been all over. You know, that guy, I'm pretty sure, is ready to go. So, yes, the talent is definitely there. For the most part, they've spent had more ring time than a lot of the guys in previous years. And I think that's a very good thing. Vince needs to be careful. He's got that third hour coming up on Raw very soon. He needs to get some of those guys on the show. I think some of them are ready. And, you know, it's going to be tough filling 3 hours, but give some of those guys a shot. They're ready.
You know, one of the things that, even though I don't like a lot of the styles that had been displayed in TNA, what they've been trying to do, and it looks like they're at least having the ability to reach out and do some one-offs with guys and not have to lock them up into contracts, is bring in some random new talent and some random new faces, which they obviously need. And as much as I don't like the styles, I like Chikara. I really do. Les would shoot me in the head for saying this, but for what it is, I actually enjoy it as a sidecar to wrestling. I would much rather see that than see Mia Yim fight a dude in CZW with barbed wire and tables. It's just, you know, I'll take the funny. You know, that's just me. But to see it in TNA, I don't necessarily like it. But, you know, Rubix, who's Jigsaw, and Sanjay Dutt had a pretty explosive, fun, because they hit everything, little three-minute match. And it harkens me back to the days of Nitro where, you know, I didn't really think El Dandy had a hard hitting left hand, which, you know, we should talk about that later, all the great left hands in history for guys who didn't look like they could play the part, Michael Hayes, Bobby Eaton, El Dandy.
Yep.
You know, they always had a hard left hand. But
sure
at least there were different guys on there, and you got to see some flash and some color, and I kind of like that about TNA. Is that something they should use that first hour for? We've heard things about Tyson Kidd. We've heard them possibly bringing back the Cruiserweight division. Should they just go ahead and Nate, lock Vince in a room for that hour and just throw some stuff out there and see what happens?
I think they should. They have nothing to lose. There are so many different styles out there that they could bring. Once again, it could be a Vince thing. You know, Vince doesn't like it, so it doesn't happen. But, you know, WCW took that same risk back during the Nitro days when they went to 3 hours, and it really paid off. You know, the cruiserweights, the luchas, the guys from Japan, they all added spice and color to that show, and they made it a dynamite show. You know, 3 hours went pretty quickly for me. I thought they did a very good job with the different styles, and WWE just needs some variety, and it's not the variety that we've been getting lately. You know, it's the same guys, it's vanilla faces, it's same old, and you know, yeah, I enjoy the returns by Vader and Sid and Bob Backlund and those guys, you know, the legends. But there has to be more substance. There has to be something new that draws fans in. And I think bringing in guys with those new styles would add a lot of spice to the show. And believe me, it does need spicing up quite badly.
Yeah, I love it. They always want to blur into the mainstream, too. And every time they have something that blurs reality and gets even the hardcore wrestling fan and follower and geek, if it were, to mark out and lose their minds, and also get some of the mainstream interested. CM Punk, they kind of let that one blow over. They had something, like you're saying, you know, something new. They had, look, there looked to be a hangover after The Rock and John Cena, because you knew Rock was leaving and you figured Rock was going over and all that. And then they were given Brock Lesnar on a silver platter.
Yeah.
And we're at where we're at with that, which we'll talk about after the break here. We're going to just take a couple of breaks tonight, as there's no guest this evening, so we're probably going to wrap it up a little bit earlier tonight. Tim Hornbaker is going to be on next week, actually, to talk about his new book coming up, and we hope to have some reviews from that on that book, Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150 Years of Headlocks, Body Slams, and Pile Drivers. Reviews on the book by both Rich and I up at Ringside Rap coming up next week as well. So get back into everything that's going on the main scene here, too. And in fact, well, while we're going to break, I'll check the UFC results as well, as there's a show going on Fuel, a channel you probably don't get. But we'll be right back on Ringside Rap.
Hey, this is Kate Pearson from the B-52s for RAD. Getting drunk is your own business, but when you drive drunk, you make it everybody's business. Don't drink and drive. Be responsible, plan ahead, and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Thank you. What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid?
My fondest memory of music class is kind of just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and yeah, you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted a really long time. At least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes, and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking.
Sorry, there's no credit fairy here.
What's that?
He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi, joined this evening by Mike Mooneyham. And Mike, before we went to break, was kind of going into a lament about Brock Lesnar. But before I do that, I'll just mention the UFC coverage on Fuel. This is one of their many, many shows that they're running, and it's a notable show this evening in that Mark Munoz will be facing off against Chris Weidman, and these are both two All-American wrestlers. Weidman in the, I think it was only a couple of years ago, I think 07, 08, 09 in that time frame, and Mark Munoz from the beginning of the decade was an All-American out in the, I believe it was Arizona State. And the reason this match is important is Weidman is undefeated. Mark Munoz has been around a while and has really worked his way up into putting himself into contention for a title shot. And odds are the winner of this match, if it ends up being a good, impressive performance, odds are they're going to go on to face Anderson Silva, who just this past weekend rolled through Chael Sonnen, lost the first round, but then ended up beating Chael out in the second round after Chael missed the spinning backflip, landed on his butt. Anderson Silva delivered a knee, bunch of punches, and then it was over. So that's why this one's notable this evening. The card is just starting up, the undercard for the main event coming up on Fuel. So as that continues on, I'll try to update that if my multitasking skills are safe there. But former UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar, again, seemed to be served to WWE on a silver platter. Regardless of what they did with John Cena, they had a chance to get out of that and do some other more interesting things. When they brought Paul Heyman on, it looked to be an incredibly impressive feat by the McMahon family with the relationship that Paul's had with Stephanie McMahon in his last run there in doing SmackDown, and then in Ohio Valley, I believe, as well. But it's just, this whole thing's at a weird stall, and I guess WWE's excuse will be, well, we are trying to work the storyline along, but Brock's got limited dates, and we're doing what we can. I don't even know what Brock's side is saying right now. He had a meeting with Dana White a couple weeks ago that apparently did not go well, so God knows what that was about. But, again, Brock Lesnar is one of the few guys who, you know, excited everybody when he showed up on Raw the night after WrestleMania and laid out John Cena. And they've got something going on with Triple H, who usually does not involve himself in poor storylines. What do you think is going on with this? And is this politics? Is this just not knowing what to do? What exactly do you think is going on here?
I definitely think there's some politics going on because, yeah, granted, Brock Lesnar has signed for a limited amount of dates, but you got to think this can't help business with, you know, Brock coming in so strong, working that really good match with Cena, and then just sort of disappearing, you know. It's been a lull, and I think it's lost so much momentum that maybe they'll get some of it back, but you know, it seems like they've lost an awful lot of ground with Brock, and interest in the product has waned recently. So, you know, I don't know if that's a good business move on anybody's part. And you know, we were lamenting about the lack of talent in the organization. I had an interesting talk with Kurt Angle a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about how, you know, how hot the business was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and, you know, just the great array of talent that WWE had, you know, with Kurt and Rock and Austin and all those guys. And he told me something kind of surprising. He said, look, when I tune in now to WWE or even my own company, he said, I don't know 75% of the roster. I don't even know their names. So, you know, I thought that was pretty telling, a pretty telling statement as to the state of the industry right now. Now, he did say that there were some good guys, you know, that WWE was doing a pretty good job developing young talent. And by young talent, he was talking about guys like CM Punk and Randy Orton. And they're really not young guys, but I guess to him they were. But he just made the point that when, you know, back in the early 2000s, that, I mean, the WWE had some really good guys who could work, you know, guys like Benoit and Guerrero, and even mentioned guys like Val Venus and Bob Holly, not to mention Triple H, Stone Cold, and The Rock. He said these days it's just very hard to find a roster with guys who are that good. And I think it goes back to our other point that WWE really needs to be bringing in some guys and developing. And I think TNA is doing a pretty good job at that with, you know, as we saw last weekend on their pay-per-view with the mostly with those X Division guys. They are developing a lot of young talent. And, you know, a lot of it's coming from Ring of Honor. Kurt mentioned that Ring of Honor was the greatest feeder system in the industry right now.
Yeah, they. How do you feel? I've got to get back to Kurt Angle too. But how do you get a chance to see Ring of Honor TV, and what do you think of it?
You know, I think it's great, but it's got the fatal flaw of not being mainstream. You know, people want to see character development and personalities. And to a lot of mainstream fans, it's just too much wrestling and not enough personality. But I tell you what, if anybody's ever been to a Ring of Honor show, especially a pay-per-view, you're going to be blown away by the quality of work inside the ring. If you're a wrestling purist and you like to see good in-ring action, you're not going to see it anywhere like you see it in Ring of Honor.
I had a chance to go to the last set of TV tapings, and I mean, absolutely no lie. That month is going to be really good. And, you know, a lot of the information has come out already. You know, the biggest one being, and Ring of Honor didn't waste any time putting this out, and the fact that Adam Cole won the Ring of Honor television title on that show. And the thing started with Mike Bennett and Bob Evans with Maria up against Eddie Edwards and Eddie Edwards and Adam Cole, and Sarah Del Rey returned, you know, after that. That was a great little match. And then Sarah Del Rey returns afterwards, and the place exploded, which, yeah. You know, Del Rey, she is really, really good for those who haven't seen her. And, you know, it's not like that ROH fan base, you know, forgot about them, forgot about her, because everyone knew who she was when she came out. So, again, the month coming up looks to be really, really good. Kevin Steen and Mike Mondo had a good match, and there was good stuff up and down the show. But just want to go back to Kurt Angle for a minute. The column, you know, went up on July 1st, TNA's Kurt Angle Driven to Succeed.
Yeah.
And I know you talked to him about his efforts to go into the Olympic trials this year, which I have actually followed more amateur wrestling in the last few years, even though I've always been obsessed with Danny
mm-hmm.
Hodge. You know, I come from a family of wrestlers, but I like the pro stuff. I couldn't handle the amateurs, but as I've gotten older,
uh-huh.
I love watching the NCAAs, you know, and
looking
at talent. In WWE, Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, who's got a history of amateur wrestling as well.
Yeah.
What I was very critical of Kurt Angle and the fact that I still believe a documentary is going to come out and creep out sooner or later about his quest to try to make the Olympic team. And I'm not saying he didn't want it, but I am saying that I'm not even saying he did it as a publicity stunt. He probably just wanted to see how far he could push himself. But was it realistic? I mean, did you get from him the feeling that he had a realistic shot to really go through with that thing? Because getting out when he did, you know, that was kind of telling. And he wasn't the only one. Rulon Gardner did as well, but it was a little bit of a different situation.
I really think, and knowing Kurt, I've known him for a while, I really think that he believed he could make the team. I really do. I know most people will probably disagree with that. And, yes, it was a very unrealistic thing, but not to Kurt. You know, Kurt's a guy who absolutely thinks he can do anything. I mean, that's just Kurt. He, you know, he admits he was pretty much a long shot bid, but he really thought he could have been the best opponent for Jake Varner, who won the silver and bronze medal at the World Championships and ended up making the team. But, you know, I also think he understood the risk he was taking. He suffered some injuries. And at 43 years old, that's going to happen when you're training like he was. And, you know, it's just crazy that he was training and doing TNA at the same time. To me, that was probably the most unrealistic part of it, and he pretty much admitted that as well. And people were asking him, you know, are you going to do it 4 years from now in 2016? Even Kurt said, you know, no, I'll be 47 years old. I do learn from my mistakes. No way I could do that. So I don't think we'll see him doing it, you know, in 2016.
Amateur wrestlers are wired different. They're just, they are. If you look at Mark Coleman, if you look at what Randy Couture accomplished in his career, Dan Henderson's got a huge fight coming up against John Jones, and Dan Henderson is the Energizer Bunny and is, you know, one of the most underrated fighters of all time. I think when it gets down to it, everybody's going to remember the big names for people. I mean, Henderson is a Hall of Fame slam dunk choice. They're just wired differently. And I was just, and it's not even like I was putting down Kurt Angle for trying or saying it was all publicity stunt, but he's just got a special mind. He had a working pro wrestling mind before he ever even got into pro wrestling. He's such a natural at it, and he is such a good self-promoter, and he puts himself in such good spots. And I'm not, and this is going to sound terrible, and I even what's happened with his DUIs and such, where it says, look, I got a 0.0. You know, that's what the test said. I don't know. He's just one of those guys who, as a pro wrestling character, a lot of people were upset when he was put in the Observer Hall of Fame, and people couldn't understand why at such a young point he was in.
Yeah.
To me, he's always been a slam dunk choice, and he put on a performance with Samoa Joe which on this past Sunday, which was a good reminder of him at his best, which was he and Samoa Joe a couple of years ago in TNA.
Yeah. Kurt can still turn it on. You know, I asked him if he would maybe like to return to WWE sometime in the near future, and he said, look, I don't rule out anything. And, you know, he did mention that he'd like to go another round with Brock. And he says he's doing his best wrestling. Yeah. And, you know, the guy is fearless. He's totally fearless.
I'm not going to say he's a treasure, but he's right up there. I mean, I love Kurt Angle, and I'm happy to see TNA actually on a little bit of a roll because, for guys like Kurt Angle, who, I'm not saying you forget about him being in TNA, but you dismiss TNA. But when things are rolling well, which they are right now, you're able to look past some of the goofiness in the storylines which have been taking place with AJ Styles and Chris Daniels and Bubba Ray and Abyss for the most part, too. I mean, such a goofy thing, such a soap opera thing, but it's been played so well that you kind of forget about it and you're happy to see it in comparison to all the other wrestling you're seeing. What's your feeling right now on how TNA has been moving forward with their storylines, which, again, the in-ring action has been phenomenal in a lot of ways. This past Sunday, again, Daniels and Styles, I can't say enough about that because they wrestled a zillion times, and they had a fight, and they mixed it up, and it was great, even though they scared the hell out of me with that spot at the end. Yeah. But what do you think about the actual stories that are carrying these things along?
Yeah, and, you know, I haven't been keeping up with it as much as I normally would have, but what I have seen is a marked improvement. And, you know, the wrestling has pretty much always been there. It hasn't always been utilized, but it's been there. They're utilizing that in-ring talent right now. They're grooming young guys, especially the X Division guys. They're giving them a little more prominent roles, a little more time. And even creatively, I've definitely seen an upturn since Vince Russo has departed. You know, maybe that's a coincidence, maybe not, but they have definitely been on an upswing. And at that same time, I think WWE has retreated a little bit. So TNA is making some progress. They start up tomorrow night with their new Rewind show, at least for the summer season. And 3 hours live, I mean 2 hours live, and I think the live TV has really made everyone up their game a bit. At least that's what they tell me. You know, it makes a difference when they're going live, and you know, nobody knows what's going to happen, and it's fresh. And I think that's even improved the morale of the troops. you know, getting back to Kurt, I was asking him, you know, how was the locker room, and he said, "Yeah, you know, everything's good," and he kind of offhandedly said that, you know, even Hogan has been, you know, pretty good the last 6 months or so, you know, implying that he wasn't doing much before, but he's taken a little bigger role the past 6 months. He said something like, you know, even Hulk's doing some stuff now. So, fortunately, it hasn't been inside the ring.
God knows, yeah. I don't want to see Hulk Hogan drop the leg and then never be able to get back up again. I mean, for all the jokes you can make about that, I don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, that's not good TV.
if everything continues to go along smooth, I mean, you know, obviously Bruce Pritchard, you know, counterbalancing, you know, having the old school wrestling in his blood and from the Mid-South and having that in his blood and a long time in WWF and knowing what works and what didn't work in the 80s and into the 90s, alongside Dave Lagana, who is a from this generation. He's a writer. He's a good producer when SmackDown was doing some of its best. He was around at that time and running the show and did a very good job at that, did a very good job getting Ring of Honor going. I mean, I love Mike Hogwood, but he was not a great wrestling announcer, and he and everybody around there, Dave Parade, helped him along, and really the show was very good, even though it wasn't seen by a whole lot of people on HDNet. And Eric Bischoff, Dave Sahadi, who can do you know, great taped pieces. They have a core of guys where if everyone kind of does fill out their place with what they're doing and the stability that they have up top with the James Storms and Bobby Roods and Daniels and Styles and some of the other guys they have, they do actually have the ability to have positive momentum and then hopefully, for their sake, increase their pay-per-view buys, because as great as the numbers are growing every week and people haven't had a problem with the going from 8 to 10, it still comes down to the buy rates. And Jessica, we'll throw it to break here real quick. But when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on, is what you're seeing, would it make you want to buy it more? Because when it gets down to it, can TNA just increase their buy rates? Because that's really what they need. But that was a very long-winded way to go to a break. So we're going to go to that, Frank. Les is going to come back and tear Reedy an ass next week, but we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Hi there, I'm John O'Hurley for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. You know that more than 300 people are killed in America every week in collisions that are caused by drunk drivers? Just imagine, that's the equivalent of 2 plane crashes in 1 week, every week. So be responsible, won't you? Choose a designated driver. Because friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I knew I was stuck at this kid's house for the night, but those guys snuck up on me to try and pull the hand in a bowl of warm water trick. Well, that was enough for me. I went downstairs to sleep in the basement, even though it was pitch black. I left my sleeping bag upstairs, and that was a mistake, because it was freezing. I think it was probably the longest night of my life. To read more about the sleepover, check out Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Last Straw by Jeff Kenney. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library and visit read.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
So, Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something, and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text. Oh, there's another one. Wow. Busy, busy me. So, anyway...
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. My friends keep commenting on my comment. Oh, there's another one. So many comments on my comment.
Oh, I can't wait to watch TV tonight. Playoffs!
Hey, guys, check out my new video game. Pew, pew!
Wait.
Mom, what?
Huh? What? Hold
What'd
on.
What'd you say? Wait a second, what?
This weekend, unplug. Take your family to the forest. There's nothing in the world like experiencing nature firsthand. Trees, paths, bluebirds, streams. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones and mighty fine for skipping stones. You'll feel fresh as a lemonade setting in the shade. Weather is hot.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mike Sempervivi, along with Mike Mooneyham, who's filling in for Les this week. And And thank you, Rich Tate, for bringing us back and impressing me with the fact that, that Andy Griffith passed away. And I live at the beach, believe it or not, on the coast of Delaware. But I have to escape the beach and actually go to another beach because I just cannot handle this one, having to work and live here. So I usually try to escape to Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina, which I discovered is now my new favorite place on the planet. But Daray County, apparently Andy Griffith, when after he passed away, only 5 hours, they had already had him had his funeral, and you know, Ron Howard is one of the only guys left from that show, and it just kind of sad. I don't know, because it was a little bit out of my age group, but growing up as somebody who had TBS and had a lot of UHF stations, I watched my fair share of Andy Griffith. But for people in the South, and especially in that area, how big of a blow is it with Andy Griffith passing away? Because a lot of people don't realize his great comedy that it was called Football, which is a classic comedy bit, and you know, it's awesome. I mean, what does he mean to those people in your neck of the woods?
Oh, he was the guy next door, and you know, I'm old enough to remember watching those shows in their first runs back in the '60s, and it was a terrific show then, and boy, did it stand the test of time. It's a terrific show now, and it will live on forever. But just, you know, Andy was Mr. Everyman. He was one of us. He everyone related to him. He was you know, the show. I really thought the show was one of the best shows in television history. I mean, I love Lucy and those shows. But, I mean, Andy Griffith show was just a notch above. I mean, every episode taught a lesson. You know, it just wasn't great characters. It was a great lesson. And Andy was such a diverse character. I mean, I don't know, you know, if you saw Face in the Crowd, 1957 film.
No.
But Andy portrayed a guy named Lonesome Rhodes, and he was right out of a wrestling storyline. I mean, he could have been Dusty Rhodes back in 57. It was tremendous acting performance. He was a great musician, great, you know, storyteller. He was part of our culture, and you know, I knew Andy was going to go at some time. At some point, he was 86 years old. But when it happened, it sure was sad, and especially coming just a few months after the passing of George Lindsay, who played Goober Pyle. And, yeah, it's just, you know, it's lost a childhood, you know, part of my childhood when Andy left.
The thing I love about the show even now, and as I've gotten, you know, as you get older, I think you mellow out and you become a little more conservative, and you start to, you know, you're so fired up as you grow up. And, you know, watching the Andy Griffith Show when I was a kid, and I liked it, but, you know, it never really sunk in. But one of the things that sinks in now, and I think one of the reasons I liked the show then, as much as I'll probably prefer a movie like Pulp Fiction over what was that Tom Hanks movie that came out the same year that everybody loved, Forrest Gump. I'll probably take that one, but as I've gotten older, it's nice to see nice shows where, you know, yes, there were bad guys, and yes, they were police officers, but it's not like it is today where it's just, you know, it's nice to actually be able to tell a story and to get things through without just, again, not like WWE style with AJ, but just beating you over the head with it and always having to have swerves and always stooping to the lowest common denominator. Rich let me know, too, on Turner Classic Movies coming up on July 15th, they're actually going to play 4 movies featuring Andy Griffith. So Facing the Crowd, No Time for Sergeants being 2 of them as well. And,
oh, that was a great one, No Time for Sergeants. That was... that was also with Don Knotts. And
yes.
And, yeah, I mean, I just can't say enough. You know, here was a world of fishing holes and ice cream socials and just really solid family values. And ironically, that was back in the 60s, and that decade would become pretty tumultuous, you know, with the Vietnam War and the changing tide in America. But just that period in time, you know, I can watch that show and be right back then. And I think a lot of us, you know, you mentioned yourself having not grown up in that era, but it's refreshing to sort of, you know, get out of this fast-paced technological world we live in and just sort of retreat to a time that was much more simpler and, you know, really a lot more civil.
It's one of the reasons I like bailing to Carolina every chance I get. But as somebody who's been on the line for a while here on hold, Larry in Florida. So, Larry, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good, Mike. Really enjoying the show. You guys do a great job every time out. Really like it. The reason I'm calling tonight is I want to speak to Mr. Mooneyham.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Good.
It's been, 6 or 7 years we've been corresponding.
Yes, at least, yeah. You're an old Carolina boy at heart.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in Sumter, South Carolina. Went to the township in Columbia many, many times to watch wrestling. And I've been pretty much reading your column since the early 80s, pretty much the beginning. And you do it. I got a question for you, though.
Yeah.
How did you convince the newspaper the weekly wrestling column was going to get over?
Well, that's a very interesting story, Larry. Back in the 80s, wrestling, you know, that was sort of around when wrestling began its national expansion. And, you know, I had even reported on wrestling back. I had done stories back in the 70s and 80s. I had, as a sports editor, I had snuck in stories. You know, I did huge front page features on Marvin McDaniel and guys like that. But we sort of had a changing of the guard back in the mid-80s, and I approached our executive news editor, who was very progressive. You know, he wasn't the kind of guy who would want to just hide the results back on the, you know, on the back page.
Right.
And I said, you know, and he knew I had a really strong wrestling background. And we had a meeting, and he said, you know, I'd like to really – in wrestling, like I said, it started getting really mainstream. He said, I'd like to talk to you about maybe doing wrestling stories for us. And I said, well, you know, I'm the guy. What do you want, maybe once a month, something like that? And it was actually the executive editor who said, well, what about a weekly column? And I said, well, fantastic. You know, this was, I don't even know if there were any other wrestling columns back then, you know, for mainstream major newspaper. I said,
I don't remember seeing any. I looked at a lot of newspapers, and yours is probably one of the first that I remember seeing, you know, on a weekly basis. And I said, I've been reading it.
It's definitely the longest running. But anyway, I said under one condition, that it not run in the entertainment section, that it not run in our feature section, but it runs right in our sports section. You know,
uh-huh.
I wanted to give it that legitimacy. And he said, sure thing. And I've been doing it ever since.
Cool. That is a good story, and I'm glad to finally hear it, glad to finally get to talk to you, if not in person, at least, you know, voice and stuff.
Yeah, Larry, I feel like I know you really well. I know you just came off of a trip yourself, right?
Yeah, I was actually went up to Pennsylvania for a family reunion, and while I was in Altoona, Pennsylvania, I went by the site where they had all the wrestling cards, the Jaffa Moths up there.
Yeah.
So that looked like a nice building to have wrestling in. And I have cousins up there that have been to the matches up there before, so we get together and talk about them sometime. But you guys do a great service to the wrestling community, and I just want to say a big thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Isn't it funny how we always incorporate wrestling into our trips and vacations?
Funny how that
I mean, I'm going up to Florida right now. We've had a heck of a time deciding what, you know, our itinerary was going to be and where we're going to go. But, you know, I've managed to get a couple of days to at least one solid day to go to Ocala and see my friends Dory and Marty Funk up there. So there will be a little wrestling flavor to my trip next week.
Well, next time that you're down this way and up that way, let me know. Maybe I'll take a trip up there and we can all get together.
All right, man. Give me a buzz on Facebook. We'll make it happen.
I will give it. You guys take care. Thank you.
Thanks,
hey, you too, Larry. Thank you very much. And thank you for the kind words as well. And, yes, I love it. It's funny. It's one of the first things of starting to drive down, because I'm a Metro D.C. guy, Baltimore, Washington, so I would tend to stray more towards cities I feel comfortable in when I wanted to get away from the shore again. But then starting to go south, I started to actually go out of my way to, like go by the Norfolk Scope, and go by buildings, just to go by where Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, you know, you bring up about, you know,
that's what I'm talking about, Mike. You know, I was when I was in Savannah last week, you know, I had to stop by Grayson Stadium. I covered so many great shows there during the 70s. You know, I had to stop and do the photo op and everything. Had to go by Grayson Stadium, where I covered great matches, you know, historic Grayson Stadium. But I couldn't find the old Savannah Sports Arena. And it really bummed me out, because I knew it was around that general vicinity. But I also know that the last time I tried to find it, I actually think it was an old converted Piggly Wiggly.
Oh, no.
Now, that shows you how your mind can do certain things. You know, and I'm talking about matches back in the 60s and 70s when everything looked bigger. You know, that was before the advent of major wrestling coliseums, and you know, the smaller buildings were looked really big and spacious to us at the time, you know. But I was so disillusioned when I went back years later, and somebody said, I said, well, what happened to the sports arena? And they said, well, if you want to do your grocery shopping, you can be in that sports arena. It's a Piggly Wiggly over there. So, you know, I said, oh, man, you know, I saw sellout crowds here. But I don't know how good it would have looked inside, but it was a big Piggly Wiggly, you know. So, which shows you really can't go back home, can you, Mike?
No, you can't. But you can't. But at least you got your memories, and you know, it's
yeah.
Like I started getting really lucky when I guess my parents didn't care about me, and they let me watch wrestling from an early age. My father was a wrestling fan, but it was right as UHF was taken off and cable TV was taken off, and
right.
You got stations from both Baltimore and Washington, and then. You know, now if you try to get in an AM radio station, you can't get in anything. But
oh, no.
You know that you could pull in on that antenna stuff from all over the place, and I was really blessed to see a lot of stuff. And my favorite first wrestler was Ric Flair, and my favorite tag team was Steamboat and Youngblood. And I remember just, you know, sitting there and, you know, watching everything that was happening, obviously not getting a chance to see the match, but then watching TV afterwards. And I'm seven years old. And I remember it was either the Wrestler or Inside Wrestling. It was one of the Victory Sports or After magazines, if you will. And, you know, they had that right in the middle of it. It was, you know, whatever it was, 16,000 in the building, 16,000 turned away with a picture of all the cars backed up. And it's just, it's amazing that those memories, and I love those memories. And it's just like, that's one of the reasons I want to actually try to get to Greensboro. It's just because of that. It's because of the memory when I was 7 years old. And
the Holy Grail.
Yeah, it really is. And it's like, as I'm questioning now whether to have my son watch wrestling, and he's been to the Ring of Honor tapings, and,
yeah.
You know, to show you how warped he is. His favorite wrestler is Brutal Bob Evans.
That's not a bad choice.
Well, I think it also is because, you know, even at 4 years old, if people have seen this child on Facebook, good looks skip generations, and it skipped over me and went right to him. He gets him closer to Maria, which is, I think is the real reason he's happy about this. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether he should watch wrestling in this place. You know, I remember my dad taking me to the Baltimore Civic Center and then the Baltimore Arena.
Yeah.
To see all the different shows that would come through, and
yeah
it's kind of, it's funny quandary right now, and you're a little bit older, but you had kids. What was, you know, what do you feel about wrestling now and kids watching wrestling? Because I know Les hates Chikara, but at least it's a safety valve for fun stuff if kids wanted to watch it. You know, it's safe. But what are your views on right now? As we talked about Andy Griffith and kind of, you know, slowing things down, and TNA slowing things down. What do you think about kids in wrestling today?
Yeah, you know, I come from an entirely different generation, and the older I get, the more far removed I am from the business. But, you know, during the 90s, during the Attitude Era, I definitely wouldn't have let my kids watch wrestling, and they're both grown. And you know, ironically, they weren't really into wrestling that much. I mean, they knew all of my friends in the business, but, you know, it was no big deal. You know, I remember one time my youngest son, Mikey, Mikey was in the back seat with Rick, and I was up in the front seat. I can't remember who else was in the car. But, you know, Rick commanded a little bit of space. I mean, Mikey was maybe, 9 or 10 or 11 years old at the time, right? So Rick's in the back seat, and Mikey keeps nudging him over. And I look in the back, and what's going on back there? And Mikey's nudging Rick over. Mikey said, I need my space, just nudging Nate over and over. Just to bring up the point that it was no big deal, to these guys who, were major stars in the wrestling business, but my kids knew them. I mean, they were just, regular guys, regular friends. So they were never really bitten by the celebrity and that type of thing. So, as a result, they never really got into it. But getting back to if I had kids today, I mean, I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, the product is definitely cleaned up. I just wish people could have grown up when I grew up, back in the 60s. It was such a great era, and especially for pro wrestling. My memories are so strong, so vivid. I also have the story of putting an antenna up on the top of my house so I could pick up wrestling shows from south, north, east, west, whatever I could pick up. I bought a rotor so I could move that antenna around to different, parts. So maybe I could pick up Florida. Maybe I could pick up the show from Atlanta. Maybe I could pick up the show from North Carolina. I mean, I loved it from the very first time I saw it. And, I got bitten by that bug, and I got bitten badly.
It's like same here. That's why I love doing this show, and I love doing it with Les every week. And when you come on, and it's just – and Bob, and Bob the fifth Beatle here too, growing up in the Northeast and being immersed in everything that was going on. My memories of doing the exact same thing, and me being really part of the last generation that had the ability to do that and had a chance to see. And I know everybody always says, the wrestling you grew up with is the greatest wrestling of all time. And,
everybody said that. Yeah, even back in the 60s, people were telling me, Strangler, Lewis, Jim Londos, these guys today don't have nothing. So I very much appreciate that sentiment. Yes, I do.
My grandfather being a Polack and telling me about Vladek Zabisco and his mother shaking, fresh from the old country, shaking the cane at the TV, just losing her mind for it. And,
in those 2.5 hour Broadways.
Yes.
Speaking of talking about rest holes, huh?
Oh, God. I tell you, and it's like, Flair and Wyndham for me, it was going 60 minutes on TV, and God knows how many minutes they actually went, I didn't time it, but, thank you for continuing to write those comms, because you did one, the last one before Kurt Angle was about the Mulkeys, which, if you grew up in the 80s, and I can name every single tag team that went through Jim Crockett from every tag team period in the 80s. I love
that. That was your era. That was your era, Mike. Yeah.
Oh,
Mulkeys.
God, yes. Yeah. And it's just, and you had the Rock and Roll and the Fantastics and the Midnights and the Road Warrior, and you go on and on and on and on, and Koloff and Carnoodle all the way.
Yes.
But you can't have any of that if you don't have the Mulkeys. Getting beat up on TV every week and then getting the surprise win and being seed 16 in the Crockett, just all that, everything where even the jobbers had personality, even those guys had, and you talk about it, and they talk about the fan base and the emotions that they would elicit, and they were the Mulkeys who won one match and wore purple at a time where it wasn't cool.
Yeah, and did you read the part about where Randy was stabbed by his ex-babysitter?
Yes.
I mean, where else could that happen but professional wrestling? She used to babysit the kids, and she knew who they were. And, for the most part, they were baby faces, but they happened to go up against the Rock and Roll Express that night in Greenville. And, of course, they were in the bad guy corner. So she had to stab him, right? She had no choice. And when they tried to haul her off, Randy said, "No way. That woman sits here. She's a fan." He was proud, and he showed me the scar. You know, it was great. He's proud of it.
And it was great that the next time that they had come back again, because they were facing off against Koloff and Khrushchev, she was cool.
She was cheering. She was cheering.
You know, everything's forgiven.
That was the world we lived in, man. That was the wrestling world.
Hey, the kids today won't get the ability, and you know, the Baltimore Civic Series carries a lore in the After magazines, and it was, you know, it just because it was a city being fought for, it got a lot of attention all over the place, and there was always a lot of shine put on Baltimore. So there's this lore about the Civic Center, but, you know, kids today are not going to have the ability to do what, you know, during intermission and all the parents would go into the corner and you go with them and they'd be smoking. And, you know, there was a guy with a rubber chicken. And as you're walking out, there's the guy who weighed 140 pounds, who was dressed up like Hulk Hogan, just sitting there smoking a cigarette. It was something
what
about
colorful.
Those shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Those house shows were, that's where the bonding experience was. I know it's a different era now where you take the circus to town, you blow through, you blow out.
Yep.
And there's
yep.
a place for that, but there's also, I still think, a place, and especially as I go through, you know, smaller towns and things like that, where they made it, the community made it the event. You know, they were the ones coming out literally week after week and drawing big houses because it was their show to go to. And I still think that there's a place for that. And hopefully, to be honest, I hope Sinclair and TNA can both get it together to tour better.
I hope so, because the touring shows, there was nothing like it. And, you know, the local shows every week in town, you know, people would come from all of the outlying boroughs, from places you never heard of, but they would be there that night, that week, at every show. I mean, they wouldn't miss it. It was appointment entertainment. They'd come from 50 miles, 100 miles. You know, some of the guys looked like they came out of from Deliverance. I mean, really, you know. But it kind of added that layer of excitement. I mean, let me tell you, man, I've been hit by shoes. I've come about a half a foot from being, you know, hit with a knife that was found in the ring while I was taking photos. Of course, I wasn't the intended victim. You know, one of the wrestlers was the intended victim, but the guy up in the balcony was a very poor shot. And, you know, I had my camera right on the ring apron, and I heard a thud, and I looked to the side, and it couldn't have been more than 2 feet away was a pocket knife that was lodged right there in the canvas.
Oh, my God.
I've been parts of riots. I mean, that's when real heat existed, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was very dangerous, and I think that was part of the allure of going to the show because, you know, it was almost like, gee, will I make it out of here alive, you know? And the wrestlers, that was definitely their biggest worry, you know, the fans, because they were true believers, especially here in the South, you know? And, well, I've talked to some crazy people over the years. Some of these fans were out, and they were saying, you know, we've come here, and we're going to get that SOB tonight. I want to take care of him. And they meant it, you know. They brought knives, and you know, in a lot of places, they sold beer in bottles. How crazy was that?
That's just, I mean, selfish.
Talk about a foreign object, man.
You know, there are so many stories. Obviously, a lot of the ones in the Mid-South are bad, but from, you know, all the stories you've heard and everyone you've talked to and everything you've experienced, what's not even that you may have been involved in, what's the worst one that it was just like, I don't know how any of you survived this at all? Like, is there a story with it that has just even knocked your socks off?
You mean like a fan and a wrestler?
Well, like either a riot scene or, yeah, just something where it was like, okay, how are you making it out of here? How did you make it out of that situation alive or out of that town alive?
Well, you know, the worst I saw was in Greenville back in the 70s when that 80-year-old guy stabbed Ole and stabbed him pretty bad, you know. I mean, that could have killed him. That was pretty rough. But, you know, Ole being Ole, he was back wrestling like in a few days. You know, a couple hundred stitches, and he was back. He was back in the ring. Roddy Piper was stabbed a number of times, and I've been involved in riots. I mean, they really had to just close the building down because fans stormed the ring, went in, you know, jumped inside the ring. Wrestlers had to kind of come together and fight them off. And it seemed like a lot of the riots were around the time Sonny King was here. Yeah, Sonny King versus the Super Destroyer, Riot City. You better go in ready to rumble for those shows.
Hey, Mike, I know we're going over a little bit over time right now, and I don't want to tie you up for too long, but just because you mentioned it, and I've seen on YouTube some of the oldest promos I've seen released from Crockett Promotions, where, you know, it's Ric Flair and Rufus Jones, and it's one of the feuds, Sonny King and the Super Destroyer.
Uh-huh.
And I know Rich loves what Sonny King did too, his work, and I've heard about him in the South. What made him so special? Because he's kind of a footnote name. People see his name when it comes to the WWF tag titles that he held way back, but it's a name most people don't know. What made him so so special?
Sonny Big Cat King?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonny was a good talker. You know, Sonny could talk fans into the building. And, you know, a lot of times he almost made it a racial thing, you know. A lot of black fans attended the shows down here in the South. And he would bring fans to the arenas in hordes, and he could talk. And very convincing. And a little side note, you know, his son actually played football at the University of South Carolina.
Yeah, I think I saw that one of your columns.
Yeah. And Sonny to me was a lot like Bearcat Wright. You know, they fought very hard for their spot. And in a way, like Thunderbolt Patterson, they came up in an era where, you know, wrestling wasn't always the most just business in the world. And they had to fight, scratch, and claw for everything they got. And as a result, a lot of people didn't like Sonny. I remember talking to Buddy Colt, and Buddy got paired with Sonny back in Georgia. Toward the end of Sonny's ring career, they put him in as a manager. And Buddy Cole said that was one of the worst periods. You know, he said, this ain't going to work. So it was sort of short-lived. But Sonny had his share of detractors as well. But Sonny was a great talent and very good in the ring. And like I said, he could draw fans.
Well, I've been a little bit lacking in my duties tonight trying to multitask, but some updates from the UFC. Rafael Dos Anjos defeated Anthony Nowani by unanimous decision, and TJ Dillashaw defeated Vaughn Lee by rear naked choke the first round. So that's still going on right now on Fuel. Coming up tomorrow night on Peach State Pandemonium, look at wrestling families, both work and legit. That's coming up tomorrow night, and might as well run this over because Les isn't here to do it. I'll be doing a seminar in Blue Ridge, Georgia on October 13th and 14th for NWA Deep Southern Championship Wrestling. $75 per person to participate, and all participants will work the DSCW show on Saturday night. Call 706-889-1803. Or email dscwrestling@yahoo.com for more information, and we'll also put that up on ringsiderap.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at ringsiderap on Twitter or at SemperVB. There is no at Les Thatcher, and there probably never will be. But, Mike, you're on Twitter, in fact. What's your handle?
By Mike Mooneyham. Of
and,
course.
And after this vacation, you'll be back to it. You got anything coming up here for the next column for the Post and Courier, which, by the way, it still annoys me that all these goofy papers from Charlotte I can get on my Nook, but I still don't have the ability to pick up the Post and Courier yet. Somebody's got to work on that.
Yeah, well, they're pretty technological around here. I'm sure some of our IT guys will get on it. But,
do it for me, guys.
But, yeah, this Sunday I have a column on a really nice, cute girl named Velvet Sky.
I like her.
I do, too.
I do. I like Velvet Sky. God,
have you
like
seen
Velvet
the new
Sky.
Video with Montgomery Gentry?
Yeah. I just, man. Yeah, it's one of those things, and it's too bad. Angelina Love just was released in the past week or so, but there's a TNA created thing. WWE stole it, but there, I mean, Velvet Sky, talk whatever it is about her lack of, June Byers, Joyce Grable style of work, but, and she's never probably going to get to what Trish Stratus did either, but you know what? She's at least the closest, I think, in that vein of somebody who came in ice cold for absolutely no real reason to wrestle whatsoever and has taken it very seriously and has at least tried to do her part going along. And I think it's actually been a pretty good success story.
She has. You know, she was with the original group of Knockouts, and she's really done very well. Loves the business. When it's time to call it quits, she'll know when. She wants to get married at some point. She doesn't want to be in wrestling, too long to miss out on that opportunity. But she's really a sweet girl, and she loves the South. You know, she's from Connecticut, so she's from the Northeast. But she's taken to the South and loves everything. And, she loves the Andy Griffith part of the culture. And, she may end up being a Southern Belle one day.
All right, Velvet, if you're listening, me and you. In North Carolina.
One fall to a finish. No DQ, no time limit. There must be a winner.
Absolutely. And hopefully it's a little more like the apartment wrestling I would see back in the old After magazines back in the day, too. But she could probably kill me, so I'm not going to say anything more at all.
Well, you might want to do a 60-minute Broadway with her in that case.
Only if I could. I just, man. God.
It's ending on a nice note.
That's the
And we'll be here.
I'll need some enhancement talent to go to a Broadway, if you know what I mean.
Boy, do I ever.
Les, oh, God, he's going to rip me apart next week. But Les Thatcher should be back next week, and actually also next week, Tim Hornbaker again. Les is a pro wrestling 150 years of headlocks, body slams, and pile drivers. A little bit of a departure from all the work he did in the National Wrestling Alliance book and the great research, and again, a must read for anybody out there. It just absolutely is a huge must read. A little bit of a departure in that he goes through and just lists guys from the days of Americus and Farmer Burns all the way up to today, with capsules and bios of all of them, and it's a really, really good read. Not as great as a read as Sex, Lies, and Headlocks.
I appreciate that. And we have another one coming out in a couple of months, so I think you're really going to like it.
Ooh. Can you tease us any further, or are you just going to leave us with that?
Oh, Heroes and Icons with Greg Oliver and Steve Johnson.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. God,
yeah, that'll be in a couple of months.
That's, yeah.
Just being totally impartial. It's a great read. If you're a historian or, a fan of today's product, you're gonna it's a book that's probably gonna take you a couple of months to really, digest. It's something like 570 pages, which that's huge. And but the stories are just so good. And, these characters are gonna come to life, and you're gonna find out so many facts and so many little side stories on a lot of the the great personalities in the business. And it's not going to go where the heels win. It's not going to include the same guys that the heels included or necessarily the tag teams. It's going to include some offbeat guys that maybe you haven't heard much about, but it's really good. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's awesome. And, again, I wasn't joking about Sex, Lies, and Headlocks either. I mean, that was one of the first waves of books that, came out and people rolled the dice on.
It was. Yes, it was. And, it was a New York Times bestseller and certainly non-promoted by WWE. They've had some New York Times bestsellers, but certainly pumped by the company machinery. And this one was like out on its own and, on its own merits, and did very well. And you know what I was thinking about a week ago? It's been 10 years this month since that book came out.
Wow.
Has that been like 10 years? I mean, it seems like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but it was July 2002 when it was first released.
And I can remember sitting there reading it. It was around that time. That Long Bomb, which was more about the kind of focused around the Las Vegas XFL team, but just about the fall of that and some of the things.
Right.
And Freddie Blassie's book, which was a revolutionary book for the time.
As far as
how it was Freddie Blassie and the way they did it was excellent. In that people that didn't like that, I mean, you know, again, this is why I love doing this show and going to be able to talk to Tim next week and to talk to you and for you to continue doing your columns and for Les to do this show every week and Bob to, you know, Bob works 74 jobs, not just pro wrestling. He's got 88 daughters to raise. And he's and his passion is still there too. And you know, that's the one thing, is it's frustrating as it is, I know, for people to watch WWE and I'm sure it was for a lot of older school fans, if they saw TNA and they go, well, you know, what are people talking about? Yeah, Joe Engel was good and Daniel Styles was good, but all that flips and everything in the beginning, as bad as things can be sometimes, or maybe it's not your way. You know, it's thankfully for shows like this and for Collins, you continuing on to do this and to treat it with the respect that it deserves. And, you know, the respect that I think even more than that, that the fans and the followers of it deserve because of the time that we've invested being ridiculed sometimes by the promoters, by the fans, by other people who, you know, we like professional wrestling and just can't understand it. You know, it's thank you for continuing on to do this. And I cannot wait to read that book because, again, those Greg Oliver books have been fantastic on their own as well.
And those guys are workhorses. I mean, I think they've got a private room in Notre Dame, you know, with the Jack Pfeffer Wrestling. I think they have their own room there. You know, they've gleaned so much information and really just, you know, great stories from that library. And, hats off to those guys, too. And to guys like you. And Rich and Les and people like that who keep the torch burning, you know, absolutely.
But not Wade Keller. Are we throwing Wade Keller into that because you said torch? I'm going to take that as a direct insult against Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer, who
that's one of my phrases, keep the torch burning. Keep the torch, you know, flame burning, so... Yeah.
Which allows you to sleep in Bruce Mitchell's name, so there.
Oh, got to throw in Bruce. Good old Bruce.
Well, Mike, again, I thank you for hanging on as long as you have, and thank you for allowing me to suck all the air up out of the room and to run my mouth while Les is away. So thank you so much.
We all miss Les. Les proves the adage that less is more, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully those T-shirts will be made up by Rich Tate soon because Rich's job is producer, I believe. And I think that's where that one's going to fall. So make up the shirts. And,
there you go.
Everybody, again, you know, thank you so much for being with us. You know, we're wrapping up a little bit earlier tonight. And like, hopefully you can come on again real soon and look forward to Sunday's column, my friend.
Thank you. Well, I'm the fourth Beatle, so, you know, I have to pop up occasionally, right?
Now, it is your choice. Which Beatle do you want to be?
Well, you know, I guess I would have to be Ringo since he was pretty much the fourth Beatle. So,
oh man, see that's
you guys have to be George, John, and Paul. You know,
I just don't want to be Paul. I hate Paul.
Well,
I don't.
Maybe. I don't know if you want to be George and John at this point either, because
that's a good, very
you know what I mean.
Very good point.
Yeah. You want to be the guy above ground, so.
Very, very fine point.
Maybe we can have a match to decide, you know, who's going to be Paul and who's going to be Ringo. But see, then you could be Sir. Then you could actually be Sir Paul and turn it into a wrestling gimmick.
That's true, and you know what?
Right?
This could play into what we were talking about earlier on, because then I'd have all the reason in the world to ask out Velvet Sky, and she could be my Queen Velvet.
Yes.
So we could have,
See, we already have the angle. How about that?
King Sam, Queen Velvet, book it.
We should.
Everybody, again, we're going to talk to you next week. And Rich, roll us out.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.